You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
Yes, now it is time for Dear Science, our regular Wednesday feature. But before we get into it today, I just have a quick announcement regarding Steve Poynting, who's done the segment with us for a very long while, and it's with great sadness that he's had to permanently give up the segment. So he's been offered a job overseas at none other than Yale University. So he's heading off to do that, and unfortunately can't do the segment with us anymore. But a big thanks to Steve for all of his great work on the segment. We will miss him very dearly. But today we do have AUT's Alan Blackman, who's fantastic, done the segment a couple of times.
Good save.
Hey, big shoes to fill. I won't lie, but you've done a great job so far. So hopefully also have some other voices contributing to the segment as well in the future. But Alan is with us in the studio. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, except it's really nasty out there, Shamina.
It's so bad, isn't
not nice.
It? I'm like, where did summer go? I'm so sad, mournful of the end of summer. But we should get straight into it, because I'm aware that you have to rush off to a class after this.
Mm-hmm.
First up, we're talking about how a new test that's been done in several public pools reveals that some people are relieving themselves whilst they're in the water.
Well, certainly in Canada they're doing this anyway, so presumably this extends to the rest of the world. But this is the kind of science story that really makes the headlines around the place. As soon as this sort of broke, you saw it in every sort of online media outlet. And so perhaps the more deserving stories don't get publicised so much as this, but
everyone
nevertheless
loves a fear-mongering headline.
I guess it does make a kind of a good story anyway. But so there was some researchers in Canada, and they were sort of looking at whether people pee in pools, and if they do, then is there any way of sort of quantifying that? And so the trouble is that pee is made up of basically 95% water. And so if you're going to sort of analyse for it, then what are you going to look for? That's the question.
Right.
And not only is it 95% water, the other 5% sort of urea, uric acid, chloride ions, sodium ions, potassium ions, that can sort of come from any old wear anyway. So what they were looking for was some sort of marker in urine that they could use to determine how much urine's in the pool. And the marker they came up with, surprisingly, was an artificial sweetener called acesulfame potassium, which isn't really its real chemistry name, but we won't go there. And so this is an artificial sweetener. It's used a lot in processed foods. You probably don't even know you're eating it a lot of the time. But the beauty of it is that it basically goes straight through you without being changed.
Right.
That's the important point. So it goes in and it comes out. So they then developed a test for the presence of this acesulfame potassium. And they could then relate the amount of that in the public pools to the amount of urine that must have been put in there to give you that amount of this material, okay?
Right, okay.
So they started off with a couple of big swimming pools somewhere in Canada, and one of them was about a third Olympic size pool, so that's about 830,000 litres in that pool. And when they analysed that for acesulfame, they found that over a three-week period, there would have been about 75 litres of urine added to the pool. Okay. So that's...
Which I guess when you compare it to the actual size of the pool, it's like a small fraction, well, but it's still like a little bit gross.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And that's the way that this has been reported. 75 litres. Now, that's a lot of urine. That is a lot of urine. But when you put that in an 830,000 litre pool, if we do the maths, it's equivalent to, let's say, reduce the pool down to the size of a glass of water. So a glass of water, about 250 mils, something like that. And that's equivalent to around about 20 microliters of urine in 250 mils. And that's a tiny portion of a drop. Tiny, tiny portion of a drop. So, you know, you probably wouldn't have too much trouble actually drinking that.
For sure.
Really.
Yeah.
So it is a tiny, tiny fraction. But again, the way it's reported, it does sound like rather a lot.
Yeah.
The horrifying aspect was that not only did they do swimming pools, but they did jacuzzis and spas and stuff like that. And one of the jacuzzis had three times the concentration of the largest pool. So keep out of jacuzzis, for goodness sake.
Oh, man. Yeah, I guess... Yeah, definitely, because, you know, if the same sort of frequency of people are peeing, but there's like less sort of water to dilute that, and then you just have like a nasty sort of scenario of times the amount.
And if you read up on this, yeah, people like Michael Phelps and stuff are saying, oh, yep, you know, as soon as you get in the pool, you're going to pee. And that's fine. I mean, it is at a concentration. It's not going to cause you any harm, supposedly, but we can get onto that in a little bit. But what can happen is that some of the compounds in urine can react with the chlorine in the pool and form these things called chloroamines. And these have been linked to sort of respiratory distress and bad for your eyes and stuff like that. So again, it depends on the concentrations, whether you're talking about a lot of these sorts of things. But there's sort of speculation that asthmatics, for example, could be badly affected by these compounds that come from the reaction of the compounds in urine with the chlorine in the water. So, right. You know, it seems to me unlikely because they're going to be formed at such very, very small concentrations, yeah. Given that the amount of urine in there is very small anyway. But this is no sort of, you know, fun sort of study. This was actually published in a prestigious American chemistry journal. So, you know, this is real academic work. But obviously it's a story that Joe Public can understand, I guess.
For sure.
So
I did read that, the Michael Phelps comment about it, that he said, oh, well, the chlorine sort of sterilizes it anyway.
The chlorine kills it or something. Yeah. Not sure that's true, Michael, but stick to the swimming.
Yeah. He's a swimmer, not a scientist, you know. He spends an awful lot of time swimming for the Olympics and stuff, so, indeed. You know, not a lot of time for science.
Yes. So, yeah. And so I think that's a nice little story to begin with.
So we can probably gauge that some people probably do it in New Zealand booze as well.
I think it could be extrapolated to that, yes.
So next up, we're looking at a chemical spill that happened earlier this week in a school in Hastings, which sent several people to hospital.
Yes, indeed. Oh, dear. Yeah, I was really quite horrified when I heard about this. So this is Camberley School in Hastings. And what apparently happened was that somehow a mercury thermometer got broken on the Friday, and then when they came back on the Monday, there was reports of a strong chemical smell, quote-unquote, or toxic smell or something like that. I don't know what a toxic smell is, but... and then this led to 16 people being taken to hospital and the entire school being evacuated.
Whoa.
Okay, so we're talking a mercury thermometer here. Mm. Now, in a mercury thermometer, you've got anywhere between about 0.5 gram and 3 grams of mercury, of liquid mercury, which is not big enough to cause any problems whatsoever. Some of your listeners who are perhaps more of my age possibly will remember probably playing with mercury in the chemistry labs at school or certainly at the dentist when they used to do mercury fillings. Mercury by itself, mercury in the liquid form, yes, it is potentially nasty. It's only really, really nasty when it's very, very, very finely divided, okay? So you know that you can push mercury around and it sort of stays as a ball, but if you sort of hit it or something like that, then it goes into very, very small balls. Surface area to volume ratio gets greater, and so therefore the vapor that it gives off is proportionally more, and it's the vapor that's nasty with mercury, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But if you spill mercury, then the one thing that you do is just you throw sulfur on it. It's simple as that. It's basic fundamental chemistry, okay? There is no reason to evacuate a school for a mercury spill, okay? The other weird thing about this is that apparently there's a strong chemical smell. Mercury is odorless,
right. Okay?
So then we have the fire service saying that something like the mercury reacted with solvents in the carpet to form something. And if that's really true, then they should publish that right now because that would be a very interesting chemical discovery. Okay? It's not right, okay? Yes, mercury is potentially very nasty, okay? Not in its solid form, but when it gets, dare I say it, converted to its ions, then it's really, really nasty, extremely nasty, okay? The Minamata incident in Japan in about 1956, where a whole lot of birth defects and everything were caused from depositing mercury in the sea, and then it gets into the seafood, and horrible, horrible things. There's an incident of a chemistry professor in the States dying after she spilt one drop of a mercury solution on her gloved hand.
Mm-hmm.
So it went through the gloves, and about 8 months later, she died because of that. So some types of mercury are really, really, really toxic. This,
but in this case,
was a little bit of an overreaction. Okay. It really is. Now, and again, the general public are going to see this, and they're going to think, oh, gosh, mercury is horribly, horribly toxic. It's not. Well, and again, the funny thing was that they were taken to hospital to check for symptoms of mercury poisoning. My understanding is that mercury is very, very insidious. It takes years and years and years, okay? So it's sort of a cumulative thing. So you wouldn't get any signs of mercury poisoning from just the tiny amount that's in a broken thermometer. So really a complete, total and utter overreaction. And what really needs to happen is somebody getting in the media and saying that it's a complete, total and utter overreaction, which I haven't really seen yet.
For sure, because like the stuff that you sent me before, I was like, oh, wow, okay, sounds bad, you
know? Yes, it absolutely does sound bad. And now the people that you need to believe on all of this stuff are the people at the National Poison Centre in Dunedin, because they are the experts. And what they say is gospel. And they're the people that should be being quoted in the media.
Yeah, for sure.
As simple as that.
I'm actually also curious that there wasn't like a, you know, alarmed chemistry teacher who wasn't like, hey guys, you know, like, we probably don't need to do this.
Yes.
Like, we need to calm down.
But again, having said that, you know, children's lives are absolutely precious, and you can imagine probably the parents getting horribly upset if nothing was done about this. But it could have been so simply dealt with. It really, really could have been. So let's hope that maybe in the future a little bit of sanity prevails. Interestingly, we're talking about mercury thermometers, so they are basically very, very hard to get hold of these days. So everything's gone digital and stuff like that. And in fact, in the EU, it's illegal to sell anything that's got mercury in it. So they banned the sale of mercury thermometers, and in fact banned the sale of mercury barometers. And so there's three barometer manufacturers in England. This was about 10 years ago. They got very, very up in arms about this because, being part of the EU, they were going to basically be put out of business. You wouldn't think there'd be people making mercury barometers anymore, but there were three companies in England that do. So what with Brexit, they're probably going to be back in business now, I guess, making these mercury barometers.
Success for the mercury barometer companies. One good thing to come from Brexit. And so finally, we're talking about the return of a very high-quality New Zealand-made TV show, Sensing Murder.
Yes. I sort of agonised over whether to talk about this or not, but for goodness sake, this is in prime time on a state-funded broadcaster. It just shouldn't be there. It just shouldn't. And, you know, talking about it's probably giving it the oxygen of publicity, sadly, but you know, it's all about psychics and they're all figuring out how these murders happen and blah, 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 blah. Really interesting story about psychics. I don't know if you've ever been to the Maze in Wanaka, either of you guys.
Oh, I think, a long while ago.
Yeah. Okay, that's a brilliant place to go. Really, really cool. It's a big maze and plus it's sort of got a big puzzle world and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Now, somewhere on the premises there is buried a note, a promissory note for $100,000. I think I'm correct in that figure, $100,000, and they call this the Psychic Challenge. So it's open to any psychic, and they can come along, they can do whatever they want, they can douse, they can remote sense, they can do whatever they want, and if they find it, they get it. Okay, now the one stipulation is that there's a $1,000 entry fee, because otherwise any old crackpots will come along and, you know, have a shot at it. And as he tells the story, they've had, I think, and then this was a few years ago when I was there, they had about three or four genuine people come along, pay the money and fail. And as he said, well, you know, being psychics, you think that they would have known that they were going to fail. Which was a very nice line, I thought. But people, don't watch this. Goodness me, write to your MP or something like that and say, you know, get a decent bloody science program on, excuse my French, decent science program on Thursday at 8:30 rather than this trash.
For sure, because, I mean, I don't know, I guess it, I mean, it taps into, people love, you know, crime stories and murder mysteries and all that sort of stuff, but the problem with it, right, is that it's presented as fact.
Oh, yes, indeed, and it's preying on, on people who, you know, have gone through, it's just exploitation television. It's awful stuff. It's awful, and it really shouldn't be allowed.
For sure, for sure. Well, thank you very much for joining us again this week, Alan.
Not a problem,
Shemina. We'll talk to you again next week.
Okay.
That was Dear Science.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.